In and Out of the Kitchen by Damien Trench, July the 15th to the 19th.
Which terminal are you after?
Hang on, driver, I better just check the paperwork.
Terminal 4, please.
Terminal 4 it is.
Well, I just better make doubly sure.
You said Terminal 4 last night, and you were doubly sure then, so...
Hang on, it's not this bag I want, it's the other bag.
It's Terminal 4. Well, we go to Italy every year, and every year it's Terminal 4.
Italy you're going to?
Yes, that's right, mate, yeah.
Well, it's Terminal 4 you need, then.
Well, exactly.
Well, I would just like to be absolutely certain, driver. I think the bag I need might be in the boot.
Good grief.
You want me to stop?
Yes, please, driver, if you wouldn't mind.
Come on, Damien, please. It's...
Oh, hang on, it's on the parcel shelf. It's just behind... It's okay, driver, you may move off. Sorry, Anthony, could you just pass me the bag behind you?
Oh, what, this bag here, the one we always put all the travel documents in?
Please don't be obstructive, Anthony.
Oh, fine, you want me to...
Come on, Anthony.
There we are. All right, take it, Damien, take it. Sorry, mate.
Thank you.
Going to Italy for the new book, then, yeah?
Sort of, yes. Damien's writing a chapter for some book.
It's called Umbrian Feast.
Yeah, so I don't know why we actually have to go to Umbria, though. I mean, we could have written it here, to be honest with you.
Ah, here it is.
Oh, at last.
Right, the checking information sheet. We are departing from Heathrow Terminal 4.
That's truth.
Do you know where that is, driver? Of course, it isn't essential to go to the region you're writing about, whether you're a cookery writer or a scribe of historical romances. It's probably entirely possible to write a book about the English country garden whilst living amongst the Navajos, or to occupy a garret in Oldham and write about Turkish sweetbreads. But personally, I find that actually being there can really enhance your enthusiasm for a project. Anthony, however, was less than thrilled when I informed him of my snap decision to rent the Villa Calabria. He's worried that the minute we touch down at Perugia, he's instantly going to be invited for a string of job interviews. This is a classic example of someone worrying about something too much. If he does suddenly get an interview, even if it's a short notice, he can just fly back. It's Umbria we're going to, not the Khyber Pass.
So here it is, the tremendous Terminal 4.
Oh, look, they've got a Chez Gerard.
And we are looking for the British Airways.
No need, it's self-checking.
Hmm?
It's self-checking. It says so. Look on your ticket there.
Oh, right. What is self-checking?
Well, it's when you scan your passport in at one of those machines and then...
What do you mean, what's self-checking? What do you imagine self-checking might mean?
I suppose I thought it meant that you just got yourself to the check-in.
Unbelievable.
Are you going to be like this all week?
Like what?
Like this, like a big grump.
I don't even want to be here. You know your phone's ringing?
Don't change the subject, Anthony.
I'm not. Your phone's ringing.
Is it? That's not my ringtone. My ringtone's that thing, what do you call it? It's by the Sondheim.
Answer your phone!
Oh, it's the builder. I can't speak to him now. I've got to... Well, we've got to self-check-in.
Where it says...
Could not possibly need to press a button as hard as I'm currently pressing for
it
to work.
Give it to me, I'll do it.
Well, there you are. It stopped.
The principal reason for getting out to Italy, though, was that our builder, Mr. Bellaney, warned us that this week the kitchen would be a complete no-go area for us civilians. It will be without gas, electricity, and, crucially, preparation space. This short-term exile, though, is but a small price to pay for the pleasure of returning to a kitchen that's been fitted with the granite worktops for which Anthony and I have been saving up since what feels like the Jurassic era. These worktops will be the crowning glory of a kitchen which already boasts one tungsten incinerator, two rinsing basins, and a 3-foot, fully integrated spice gallery.
There, I've stopped it.
It stopped itself. It'll have gone to voicemail.
Can we both just self-check-in, please, Anthony?
Fine, it's fine. We just use this contraption here. I'll do it. Hand me the passports.
They're in the document wallet.
You're holding the document wallet?
Just... Oh, yes. Sorry.
Right, then you just press here, and you open them up. You pass them on the scan a bit. Right, it's just under there, like... Oh, come on, you stupid machine. Why is it? Leave it, will you?
I think you should try the passport the other way
around. I know what I'm doing. Thank you, Damien. Can you please just leave
me?
Can
I help you at all?
Yes, please.
No, thank you.
You need to put the passport the other way round.
Oh.
There you are. Do you need to know where the bag drop is?
Yeah, really, we're fine, thank you. I'm sure it's all perfectly...
Yes, please.
It's just over there by the sign.
Thank you.
I'm sure we could have worked that for ourselves. You know, why do people have to interfere all the time? Why are they so relentlessly helpful here? It's like being stuck in New Zealand.
The minute I embark on any journey that I know will end in Italy, my taste buds just start begging to be tickled like a cat in front of a fire. Focusing on food helps keep me sane while I am passing through the hell that is international security. Take off your shoes, take off your belt. You sometimes feel as if you're not starting out for a week of sun, sea and San Pellegrino, but being placed under suicide watch at a secure unit. Any road, we are on our way, so here is a quick and easy pasta puttanesca. A dish so simple to cook, it is almost embarrassing. You merely require a couple of garlic cloves sliced as thinly as you dare, a tin of peeled plum tomatoes, which you must then chop. Don't be tempted to buy them pre-chopped. You'll simply derive less satisfaction. You could try passata if you fancy, but then you wouldn't get the bits. half a handful of capers, a whole handful of olives, green obviously, and of course sliced, a couple of anchovies, you don't need to wash them, but do drain and chop them, dried chilli flakes, pinch of, parsley, flat-leaved, naturally, but chopped unnaturally roughly, olive oil, spaghetti, dried, fresh, however you like it, simply everybody is done with being snobby about dried pasta. All you must do is cook the garlic in hot oil and then add everything bar the pasta and parsley. Let it all simmer away for 8 or 9 minutes. You want it to thicken slightly. Then cook and drain the spaghetti, toss it in the sauce and sprinkle with the parsley. Puttanesca, by the way, means little tart or whore. Make of that what you will, why don't you?
Well, that wasn't as bad as it might have been. Right, well, I suppose I should call Mr. Mullaney back.
Yes, I'm going to go to the Boots, get some sleeping tablets, I think.
We're going to Europe, actually, not Australasia.
Well, I want them as painkillers. I don't think my back is going to respond well to flying economy.
Perhaps your back should have been booked to fly first class.
Oh, do you want anything? Shall I see if they've got anything for hilarious sarcasm?
Oh, Hello, Mr. Mullaney. Sorry about that. We were going through security, Anthony. Now, well, I can hardly tell you what an absolute nightmare it was. Oh, sorry, I beg your pardon. Hello, yes, that's right, yes. Trench. We are looking forward to it very much. Sorry? Well, is there anything else suitable nearby? Right. Yep, grazie mille. Ciao.
Oh, that really is cross-making.
Is it all right?
Hmm?
Mullaney.
I've no idea. That was the letting agent. The villa has collapsed. Oh, the roof has.
Oh, dear. Shall we go home, then?
Well, I can see how distraught you are.
Well, we're going to need our bags taken off the plane. Where do you think we go? Not a sign to be seen, is there? There's never anyone around to help, you know, when you need them. I suppose we're expected to fend for ourselves, are we? God, it's like Lord of the Flies.
If checking in for a flight is difficult, then extracting yourself and your luggage from said flight is a complete performance. No one seemed to know what to do. We still hadn't managed to sort everything out before the flight was ready to finish boarding and our names were being called for over the tannoy, informing us that if we didn't get on the flight, then our bags would have to be removed from it. Well, that's exactly what we were trying to achieve, so we took refuge in a branch of the sunglass hut until it had all blown over. And then, deus ex machina, a call from Ian Frobisher.
I won't keep you, Damo. Just calling to wish you a happy and productive week. I hope the Umbrian climbs will help you churn out a splendid little chapter.
It's all gone wrong, I'm afraid. The villa's collapsed.
Gosh. Are you okay?
Oh, yes, we're fine. We're still at Heathrow.
Oh, right.
We're still at the taxi rank with all of our luggage and no place to go.
Well, you should take my cottage in Cornwall. It's not a like-for-like exchange, not so many lemon groves and more tin mining museums, but it's incredibly peaceful. It's where Jane went to recover from her breakdown. You just take the train from Paddington, change at Exeter. Of course, you'll need a taxi once you get to the other end. And you must do a big shop before you get in the taxi. You'd be starting an Indian head massage, but I think you'd be ever so taken with the scenery.
What a lifesaver Ian can sometimes be. Anthony sounded delighted by the idea, because it would mean that he could easily come back for any job interview. And so we took the Heathrow Express to Paddington, bought a couple of first-class tickets, had an absolute scream all the way down, and then, having loaded up with meat, cheese, vegetables, store cupboards, staples and other treats, we taxied to Ian's place. The whole journey probably cost the same as the Villa Calabria, but it is absolutely blissful here. Really. There's just one other house next door, but it's empty. I shall be able to write, and Anthony will be able to relax.
July the 16th, Tuesday.
I rise early. Not uncomfortably, just with the sun. Anthony may well have knocked back a few sleeping tablets. I leave him in bed and go for a brisk walk. I do not see a single person, only animals. And I see my first red phone box for an age. Yesterday morning, all I could think of was Italian puttanesca. Today I can think of almost nothing but Cornish pasties. Recipe. Avoid the temptation to think of Cornish pasties as humble or simply something you buy when you're at your wit's end in a train station. Done well, they are a feast. In order to make the pastry, you will need 4.5 ounces of butter, the usual sort, diced. Likewise, 4.5 ounces of lard. A shade over a pound of plain flour, an egg, quite beaten, a little salt. To put inside the pastry, you need 12 ounces of beef, finely chopped, and no need to be a cheap cut. A couple of smallish potatoes that you've diced and sliced. A nice big onion, sliced ever so finely. Some diced swede, as much as you can handle, really. I like about 8 ounces of the stuff, but then I'm daft for it. Some black pepper to grind. To make the pastry, slowly rub the lard and the butter into the flour with a little salt. A little cold water will help you make your dough firm. When you're happy with it, divide it into equal portions and then let it rest in the fridge. 25 minutes should be long enough. Get the oven on at gas mark 7 and then mix all the fillings together and season. Then roll out the pastry on a floured tabletop. You'll want neat circles, but you can slice bits off if you need to. Then put a quarter of the filling onto the middle of each pastry circle. leaving a margin. Brush the margin with the beaten egg, bring the pastry together in the middle, and then pinch along the edges to make a crust. Bake for 12 minutes at gas 7, and then turn it down to 4 and give them another 40. Have them piping hot, I bet you. I return to the cottage in fine spirits, to find Anthony in a rather different mood.
You know, there's no mobile signal here.
Yeah, so tranquil, isn't it?
No, it's not a good thing, Damien. What about my job interview? I thought we'd be better connected here than in Umbria, but we might as well be a couple of Chilean miners.
Please relax, Anthony. There's nothing I can do to help you. Just enjoy it. You can't pay for peace like this.
This place is an absolute hellhole.
A hellhole? This is some of our finest countryside we've come to. It's not a war zone.
I need to be able to access my voicemail. If I miss a job interview, the fact that I've done so against a stunning rural backdrop will be of scant consolation.
Oh, right. Well, I'm sorry. I truly am, Anthony. Next time we go away, let's go somewhere where they're having a civil war, shall we? As long as it's got a bloody Wi-Fi hotspot.
Poor Anthony. I think he believes that I don't sympathise with him, but I really do. I know how frustrating it can be to hear news about jobs, especially when the world of print journalism is collapsing around my ears. But this place is absolutely perfect for getting one's head down, firing up the Hewlett, and just writing, writing, writing. The little bedroom upstairs has a desk, well, a dressing table, really, under the window, and the most stunning view out over the hills. I can see grass, trees, and at least 5 different shades of rock. The hands on my watch are displaying 3:15 when a gnawing sensation in my stomach brings me to my senses and I go downstairs in search of lunch.
Oh, you've eaten. Why didn't you call me for lunch?
Well, I thought you'd rather be writing. I didn't want to interrupt you when your muse is with you.
Oh, thanks. What did you have?
The cheese.
What, all of it? What with?
The chocolate.
Oh, my... But are you feeling OK?
No. I've stood on every chair and table in this stupid house and I can't get a mobile signal anywhere.
And it's got to be mobile, has it?
Yeah. Well, no, any sort of phone would do, wouldn't it?
Because did I say that I saw a phone box out of my walk this morning?
What?
Yeah, yeah,
what,
it's along where? That path. I mean, it's about 25 minutes away.
Tamen, why didn't you tell me? I've been going spare.
I thought it had to be a mobile signal.
You had to be a mobile signal. You do know you can access your voicemail remotely.
Can you?
Yes, of course you can. How do you think all those people's phones got the voicemail listened to by journalists? What, do you think they were just hiding behind a door?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I've genuinely never given it a moment's thought.
Right, which way do I turn?
Sorry?
Where do I go from here?
You want to talk about your future?
No, the phone box. How do I get to the phone box? Do I turn left or right out of the house?
Oh, I see. Right.
Right, as in right the direction or right, let me think.
The second one. No, hang on, both.
Right, thank you.
I'm slightly taken aback by the extent to which a lack of phone reception is colouring Anthony's mood. Already, he has eaten 8 croissants and 3 pounds of rather good cheese, which doesn't strike me as a particularly pragmatic approach to problem-solving. I wish I could help him more, but I do get defeated by technology and its implications. I lunch on salad leaves, oatcakes and some chutney, which I'd specifically chosen to go with the cheese. Perhaps tomorrow for breakfast I'll eat the jam that I had chosen to go with the croissants. I took the platter back upstairs to the bedroom and worked steadily for an hour or so till Anthony returned, noisily.
Unbelievable, unbelievable. It's just perfect.
Hello, Anthony.
Amazing.
What is it?
The phone box, Damien.
Oh, you found it then?
Yeah, it's just a phone box. That's it. There's no phone in it. It's just a box. It's completely and utterly...
Cosmetic?
No. It's not cosmetic. It's useless. There's nothing in it.
Nothing?
Well, there's a sheep in it.
A sheep?
Yeah, I opened the phone box and there was a sheep in it, but there was no phone.
And then what happened?
Well, I came back home in a bad mood, the one I'm still in.
Well, what about the sheep?
What about the sheep?
Where is the sheep?
It's still in the phone box.
You just left it there?
Yes.
Trapped?
Well, I don't know. I mean, how am I supposed to know if it's trapped?
Well, of course it's trapped. How easy do you imagine it is for a sheep to get out of a phone box?
Well, it had managed to get into the phone box. Presumably, it just does the same thing backwards. Or do phone boxes work like lobster pots for sheep? Is this something I should have known? Damien Trench's country code? Sheep can't get out of phone boxes. Swans are allergic to muesli bars.
Well, they might very well be, for all you know.
What are you talking about, you idiot?
Animal welfare, Anthony, is something that I happen to take extremely seriously. How on earth am I supposed to go calmly upstairs, just get on with writing a chapter about Umbrian cookery and the knowledge that there is a sheep trapped in a phone box? It would be completely impossible!
I went to the phone box in a bit of a huff, if I'm honest. There was no sheep in it. There were sheep droppings in it, so I didn't assume that Anthony had been lying. Clearly the sheep must have got out somehow. Goodness knows how, I found the door remarkably stiff. Still, I'm glad I checked. It's like nipping back home to make sure that you've shut the bathroom window properly. At night, we eat simply, I write on. Not long after bed, we heard 2 cars pulling up at the cottage next door and a number of people, I thought 7, Anthony thought 6, unloading suitcases and carrying them indoors. There was a little noise, but happily, not for long. We shall see who our new neighbours turn out to be. July the 17th, Wednesday. The light here in the morning really is extraordinary. The minute one opens the curtain, one is just bathed in its glow. I pulled on some shoes and a coat and went out for a little toddle. Anthony had awoken in a seriously contrite mood after yesterday's impression of Prince Hal. He had cooked bacon and eggs and was just on the point of plunging the cafetiere when I got back.
Oh, that is the smell to return to after a brisk perambulation.
Good, good. Well, I thought, you know, I...
Don't mention it. Just plunge.
Well, unless you would like the honours?
Oh, well, why not? Oh, that was beautiful. I hardly felt a thing. I think it says absolutely everything about Ian Frobisher, that in a house he hardly ever uses, he keeps a cafetiere this expensive.
Mm. So, who are they?
Neighbours. Mm. Well, not a sound coming from the house, but there are two slightly shabby cars parked outside.
Mm. I hope that doesn't mean that they're, you know, rough.
Well, if there's any trouble or noise from me, you know I'll just have to go straight round and put a stop to it, don't you?
Oh, absolutely, of course, and then you'd probably get happy slapped.
Do you think so? Here, I mean, in the countryside.
Well, you might.
What has Britain become?
Anthony even volunteered to wash up. And so I climbed the narrow stairs with a second cup of coffee to carry on with my Umbrian musings. I was just in the middle of an extremely purple passage about the unctuousness of artichoke hearts if you're lucky enough to catch them at the right moment, and they simply must be kept in olive oil and not brine unless you're arranged to the point of no return, when I was distracted by a noise. It came not from downstairs, from where I could only hear the squeak of a scourer and Anthony occasionally cursing the absence of a rinsing basin, but from across the way. Someone in the other cottage had put on a commercial radio station and was playing it rather loudly.
Anthony, can you hear that?
Why? What are you doing?
No, the noise. There is a radio on next door.
Yeah, of course I can hear it.
Oh, dear. Well, this is hopeless. I mean, I can't possibly work with this racket going on. The thing is absolutely blaring. Who listens to pop music quite loudly at 10:15 in the morning? It's monstrous. Where are you?
I'm up here.
What are you doing up there?
Well, I'm still trying to get some signal. I had a bar just a second ago. Now it's gone. Do you know if there's an attic here?
Well, if there is, I expect it's upstairs.
Well, I mean, do you know if we can get access up there?
I really couldn't say, but I think you should come down from there. You have a back that is not in a healthy state, and I'm worried about what you might be doing to the polish.
I'm only wearing socks.
Tables are not for standing on, Anthony.
Yes, all right, Mother. Oh, ah.
You're
right. Yeah, fine, I'm fine. Stop fretting about my back.
Oh, don't worry, I've got quite enough to fret about without your back causing me any grief. I mean, listen to that racket. It is absolutely impossible to work through. Let's face it, our tranquility has been shattered.
It's not that loud. You could just shut the windows.
What is the point in coming all the way to the countryside, Anthony, and then not exposing oneself to the fresh air at every opportunity? It'd be like going to the moon and going, oh, do you know what, I think I'll just stay in the space rocket.
Look, if it's too noisy for you, then just go round there and ask them to turn it down.
Well, maybe it's worth seeing if I can try and work through it. Well, it was pointless. I couldn't do a jot of work. I tried, but it was no use, and as the morning progressed, the din only got louder. A very distressing state of affairs. I had also hoped that we had got past Anthony's concern about phone signal, but as the day wore on, he became increasingly distressed. At one point, late in the morning, I glanced out of the bathroom window only to see Anthony in a field, standing on the edge of a feeding trough, holding his phone aloft like Excalibur and shouting, "Oh, come on, give me one bar, just one bloody bar." This is not the kind of thing someone with a back in his state should be doing. I yelled out of the window that he was seriously at risk of jeopardising his course of physiotherapy, but he just yelled back something unsavoury about his service provider. For lunch, we had pâté that we'd bought in a supermarket. Not at all bad, actually. Coarser than I had been expecting, and we had it on a toasted brioche, which was divine. The mood, however, was sombre. I struggled on for the afternoon and managed a mere 240 words, each of them about olives. There was a brief moment of elation for Anthony. A bar of signal appeared on his phone for a moment, but then it disappeared almost as suddenly as it had arrived. And his subsequent shouting was loud enough to drown out the squealing of the hooligans next door, who sounded as if they were engaged in a pillow fight. If they light a barbecue, I could very easily implode. And at about 5 o'clock, I just gave up for the day. We ate no supper and got drunk in total silence. And there was music blaring until at least 11 o'clock. Sick-making! July the 18th, Thursday.
Oh. Oh.
Is your head all right?
No. Oh, nothing's all right.
Well, at least there's no noise. Hopefully they've exhausted themselves like dogs chasing their own tails.
Oh, I should do something about the noise if it bothers you that much. I'm going to do something about my phone signal.
Really? What?
I'm going to walk out the front door and I'm going to keep going until I find some reception.
Is that wise, Anthony, in your condition?
I've got early onset sciatica, Damien. I'm not in the advanced stages of pregnancy. But I need to find out about this damn interview. I want to work. I want to get myself respect back.
Oh, very boyish from the black stuff.
Damien, what do you know about work? I mean, your job is the least hard-working existence possible. You're working here, in a sumptuous rural retreat. Even that could be your office.
Well, it could be if it was a little quieter.
Then do something about it. Go round there, knock on the door and tell them to shut up.
Oh, like you'd have the nerve.
Look, either they're being too noisy or they're not. If they are, then you must do something about it. If they're not, then you should try and get on with your life. Otherwise, you're just being hypersensitive.
What would you know about noise, Franklin? You've got an inner ear infection.
Yes, I do, and I am sick to the back teeth of relating to you. It does not make me deaf. It actually increases the volume at which I hear things.
Well, now who's being hypersensitive?
Me, obviously, but medically and not behaviourally like you, which is forgivable, I think.
Shall I make coffee?
Well, make sure you don't stand too close to the kettle. It makes a terribly loud noise when it boils.
Oh, very amusing, very droll.
Anthony was being serious about one thing, though. After gulping down a coffee and deaf to my pleading, he pulled on his sturdier shoes, not the espadrilles, grabbed two pieces of dry toast and set out in search of a mountain from which to get phone signal. There aren't any actual mountains in Cornwall, I know, but I'm sure he just meant it figuratively. I can't have been at my desk more than 7 minutes when I could suddenly hear talking, laughter, and a man called Ken Bruce informing people that it would soon be time for us all to play something called Pop Master. I abandoned hope and stomped down to the kitchen, turned the radio there up as loud as I could, and set about trying to cook my way back to happiness. Recipe. I have never been afraid to improvise in the kitchen, and frankly, I don't think anybody should be afraid to. In fact, even the invention of cooking itself must have been the result of a caveman or similar having an ooh gosh, what would happen if I pushed a bison onto a fire sort of a moment. Every single great dish that you can think of was born out of somebody possessed of a selection of ingredients and a desire to play. And thus, I give you Pilchard's à Limone. This isn't fusion cookery, I hasten to add. It is Italian cookery with a Cornish twist. Quite different. Enjoy or ignore. For this recipe, you will need a jar of Pilchards, or even better yet, fresh Pilchards, not out of a tin unless you're desperate. A pair of lemons, 8 ounces of cream, whipped, 2 fluid ounces of brandy, or 3 if you just can't restrain yourself. 6 ounces of Parmigiano, heaps of butter, pepper to taste. Take the rind off the lemons and then grind it and place to one side. Then get rid of the pith and place the pulp in a pan with the cream and the brandy and gently bring it to a boil. Let it stay there for 6 more minutes until it has reduced a little. Heat the pilchard somehow, steam, griddle, whatever, then place in a bowl with the butter and pour the sauce over. Then mix in the parmesan and scatter the zest over the top and season. Actually, I've just read that back. It sounds disgusting. It was by now 5 o'clock and Anthony had not returned. I walked once around the perimeter of the house to see if I could see him in any direction. There were quite a few dots on various horizons, but none that I could definitely identify as being Anthony. I polished off the pilchards à la mode all by myself, and by that point he had been gone from the house for 3.5 hours, which was a lot longer than should have been expected. I have always been slightly prone to panic attacks and have suffered them quite without warning all over the world, staying in a house in Copenhagen that had an odd feeling, once in a butcher's shop in Manhattan during the Thanksgiving rush, and another time in Hatfield Peveril whilst queuing for a showing of A Sing-Along A Sound of Music. And now I could feel myself starting to go once again. I tried to write, but it was useless. I tried to read. No luck. Anthony had been gone for 6 hours in total. There was no possible rational explanation for why anyone could have been gone for that long, especially one with early onset sciatica. I knew that I had to seek help, and there was only one place I could possibly go.
Oh, breathe deeply.
Hello, mate.
Hi. I'm sorry to bother you. I'm sure you've got lots of fun and noise to be making. I'm staying in the cottage next door. It belongs to my literary agent, Ian.
Hold on, please, mate. Jules, you turn the music off. There's someone at the door.
Who is it?
Someone at the door.
Oh, hello. Come in. Can we help you?
Hi. Yes, we're staying next door. My
partner. Didn't know there was anyone next door. We haven't been too noisy, have we? I'm so sorry.
Oh, no, it's fine. Honestly, I haven't noticed a thing. Anyway, my partner, he's gone for a walk. And, well, I'm very worried about it. We're staying...
Breathe for a moment. It's okay. Right, that's better. Tell me again.
I'm staying next door. Mm-hmm. My partner went out more than 6 hours ago. I'm very worried about him. I've no way of getting in touch. I think something might have happened.
Oh, well, come in, love. Have a seat. We'll make some tea. Do you like lapsang?
Oh, thank you.
Well, dear diary, the neighbours were delightful. A group of students celebrating some end-of-semester exams. And, as it happened, one or two of them were aware of my work. It turns out they had made my moussaka recipe only the night before, which was extremely gratifying to hear. They confessed that they'd doubled the amount of oregano and flipped the parmesan-gruyere ratio, which certainly got me thinking. Then one of them suggested that we use the house phone to ring Anthony's mobile number. Well, I must say, it hadn't occurred to me.
Anthony!
Hello! My phone!
My phone works. I've got reception. Yes!
Anthony, you're okay. Where are you?
Who's this?
It's me.
Where are you? Whose number's this?
I'm with the noisy neighbours.
Oh, right. Well, what are they like?
Where are you?
I'm not entirely sure. I'm about to be airlifted.
What?
I've fallen over on a spoiled tip. I've done something to my ankle, consequently something to my back, but some dog walkers found me and called for assistance.
Oh, no.
But I've got signal. I don't care about my back. All I wanted was a mobile signal.
Do you know where you are?
I've got signal!
Anthony, can you pass the phone to one of the paramedics, please?
Hang on. Oh, no, I've got a voicemail. I'll call you back.
Oh, what a performance. 10 minutes and another cup and a half of lapsang later, the phone in the student's cottage rang again.
Oh, brilliant. Oh, fantastic. I've just checked my messages, Damien, and I have been asked for an interview.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, but it would have been this morning, so I've missed it. If it had gone to Umbria, I could have had a signal and I could have come back for it.
You didn't even want to go to Umbria.
Don't try and score points, Damien. I'm strapped to a big orange plastic thing with a knackered back and one functioning ankle. I've probably developed intolerance to tin. Now is not the time.
I'm sorry. What can I do?
I just want to go home.
OK, fine. I'll take you home.
But if you want to take me straight there, you'll have to argue with these gentlemen. They want to hoist me aboard a helicopter and take me to Torquay Royal. Probably put me on a clotted green drip.
Well, I'm simply not prepared to do battle with the Flying Doctors.
July the 19th, Friday. One of the students gave us a lift to the station and we returned somewhat glumly to London by train. The only bright spot of our journey was that we had a whole first-class carriage to ourselves. I went slightly potty for the free shortbread, whilst Anthony stretched out on two seats like the Queen of Sheba and ordered a succession of gin and tonics from the trolley chap.
Oh, honestly, how can they have run out of lemons? I mean, we've only just pulled out of Bodmin Parkway.
Right, well, I suppose now we're back on our return journey, I can turn this on again.
I suppose they use lemons in cider, do they? It's probably regarded as an exotic fruit in the southwest. Turn what on again? Have you had your phone off all this time?
Yeah.
Oh, so all of the time I've been going nuts over not having any signal, you've never checked if you were getting any?
No. Well, I mean, it didn't occur to me. I thought if yours didn't work, then... Well, I mean, I just... You know,
we're with different networks, Damien. Of course it makes a difference. I can't believe you. I honestly can't believe you.
Well, you should have asked me to check. I mean, did it not occur for you to ask me to check?
It kept occurring to me. But do you know, each time it occurred to me, I thought, no, of course I'd have checked. He's not a complete idiot. Well, how wrong I was.
Anyway, look, we can put Cornwall behind us, right? It wasn't a complete disaster. I got a lot of writing done. Our kitchen's going to be nearly completed.
Oh, great. Well, I'll have somewhere beautiful to sit, unemployed, because of your poor grasp of modern technology.
I do not have a poor grasp of modern technology.
That's your phone.
Hmm? I know. Oh, got a thing on the answer phone.
Hello, Mr. Trench. It's Brian Mullaney. I've tried getting hold of your number of times without any luck, so I thought I'd leave a message. Good news, bad news, really. Well, bad news is we've not been able to do anything in the kitchen all week because of a problem with the granite suppliers for the worktops. They're having transportation difficulties and it needs to be collected from a place in Bodmin, I think they said. Anyway, the good news is they can get it to us on Monday, so me and Steve get going on it all next week when you're back. Anyway, I hope you're having a lovely time in Italy. Arrivederci. Ciao. Bye.
In and out of the kitchen starred Miles Jupp with Brendan Dempsey, Justin Edwards, Philip Fox and Alex Tregear. It was written by Miles Jupp. The producer was Sam Michelle.